And welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. Having some conversations about your small business and things about what you need to learn. And coming in March, March 3rd to be exact, is a series of workshops all collected into one thing that you really need to be clued into, because there is so much that goes into putting your small business into effect, you know, to making it work for yourself rather than to have to shutter the doors after 6 months because you didn't get it right. So we're going to help you get it right. Let me introduce around the table Andrea Cortinas and Rachel Hinman, both from Scott Hulse PC. Joe Ferguson's the director of the Small Business Development Center at El Paso Community College. Folks, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Dennis.
Let's go ahead and start talking about what you need to know in order to, first off, register for the workshops, and then what to expect.
The workshop is going to be held on March 3rd at EPCC. And you can register by visiting scotthulse.com and following the link.
Okay. I'm a small business owner. I haven't yet figured out exactly what I want to sell or what kind of service, but I know I want to have a small business and kind of get out from underneath the rat race of working for somebody. I want to work for myself. Now, the big picture here is, where do I start? What do I do? And how does this workshop help me?
Well, there are so many things that you have to know as a small business owner or an employer of any size, actually. The law controls so much of what you do. A lot of people think they can just set up shop and pay people when they can or follow whatever rules they want. But actually, there are a lot of laws that have to be followed. And what our seminar is aimed at doing is to give you a landscape, general landscape of everything that you have to follow, as well as provide you an advanced course in each of the areas that we're going to be covering.
Okay.
And I'd like to add something to that as well. At the Small Business Development Center, we see clients basically all year long. Last year we saw in excess of 900 clients at the center, many of which are coming in for small business advice on how to start a business. We do see a fair number of people that have existing businesses, that have concerns they need assistance with, but typically it's that individual coming in saying, I want to start a business, I want to do it correctly, I need advice on how do I register the business, what can you tell me about legal structure, do I need to get an attorney to assist me in that, do I need an accountant, also I may need a loan to do this, how do I do this? So we try to walk them through the preliminary steps on what they need to know to be able to start that business successfully. And many times it includes referrals out to a law firm like Scott Hulse to make sure that they set up the proper legal structure and they do what's needed to be done correctly in El Paso and the state of Texas.
Okay. Which brings me pretty much, I guess, to the first question. It's all about labor and employment and I-9 documentation. So it's a huge question, but I almost feel as though it's not exactly simple, but it's not exactly a complicated way to answer this question. What am I looking for as a small business owner in order to hire the people I want in order to help me run my business?
With regards to I-9s?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the I-9s are required of every employer regardless of size. There are a lot of laws that only apply to employers that have 5 or more employees, 15 or 20. But the I-9 requirement applies to any employer regardless of size. There's a form I-9 that can be downloaded online. But this form, although it may look simple, has to be filled out a certain way. And we're going to be going over that during the seminar and also talking about...
Sorry, Beth. Go for it again. My bad.
That's okay.
Start again.
We're going to be filling out, we're going to be showing employers the proper way to fill out the Form I-9, as well as go through different pitfalls that a lot of employers face every day. One of the biggest areas of growth that we've seen is when ICE is auditing employers to make sure that they're complying, not with necessarily whether you're hiring an illegal person, but whether you filled out the form correctly. And if you did not fill out the form correctly and you hired someone that is able to work in the United States, you can still get fined if that form isn't filled out properly. So we'll be going through that process and highlighting the different areas where we've seen auditors come down hard on employers and fine them.
One of the things that I didn't know about until I started really digging deeply into I-9 is only Puerto Rico is the place where you can have a Spanish-only I-9 form filled out. All the other 50 states and territories have to be filled out in English. I didn't know that.
That's correct. Employers can use the Spanish form for reference. For example, if you have an employee that comes in and they need assistance filling out the I-9 in Spanish, you can show them the I-9 form in Spanish, but they have to fill out the English version of the form.
Okay. So let's start looking at all of the little nooks and crannies that your workshop will give business owners like myself, all of the things, all of the necessary tools I need so that I can be successful.
Sure. One of the other areas that we're going to be covering is the Fair Labor Standards Act. A lot of times we get calls from employers that are being audited because they classified somebody as an independent contractor. We're going to be covering issues related to pay, related to whether a person can qualify as an independent contractor versus an employee. We're going to be talking about all of the different changes with the Fair Labor Standards Act that are happening now and that are proposed by President Obama and the Department of Labor. We're also going to be discussing the National Labor Relations Act. A lot of employers think that it doesn't apply to them because they don't have a unionized workforce. However, the National Labor Relations Act applies to all employers. And a lot of the rules that have been coming out of the National Labor Relations Board impact private employers with non-union employees. So we're going to be talking about that as well. We're going to be talking about social media in the workplace. That is a hot topic. A lot of it's an emerging area. Social media started really about 10 years ago, 10 to 12 years ago. And in that time, the landscape, the legal landscape for employees utilizing social media in the workplace has evolved. And it's a very hot topic. We're going to be talking about that as well as bullying and violence in the workplace and how employers can address those issues. We're going to be talking about LGBT in the workplace and other recent cases that have come out in that area, as well as giving a presentation and giving guidance on investigating employee issues all the way from investigation to termination and all the steps that employers should take to make sure that they're doing things the right way and also that they're protecting themselves so that they don't end up in a lawsuit down the road.
Okay. It all makes sense to me, and I know that the workshop is so straightforward and very necessary for each one of us to get into this whole process of making it work so that we're all successful. So, Joe, let me ask you this. As the director of the Small Business Development Center, and you've done so many different types of workshops, and yet they're all pretty much about the same sort of a thing. What's the biggest rule change you've seen in terms of labor and employment?
I think you're probably asking the wrong person since, you know, we really don't deal so much with rule changes. What we do when we counsel the clients that come in to see us, like I said, if it involves a legal issue, we're going to refer them to a legal firm.
Okay.
And that's because we're not lawyers. We're there to basically assist them many times with applying for loans, creating a business plan, a marketing plan, developing strategies for an existing business or a new business. So when we end up touching on areas of rules, labor law, we're always going to refer them out.
When you watch your clients come in and they're very, I guess for lack of a better term, they're kind of like deer in the headlights sort of people who are like, I'm amazed that I have to do this, and this, and you've made it so simple. And yet the next day they come back in and say, Joe, how come I have to do this too? You know, what the steps they have to take.
I mean, the unfortunate thing is many people that want to start a business, they don't thoroughly understand the complexities of what it's like to be a business owner. They may have a good technical skill, and they think, well, I can apply the technical skill that I have in terms of starting a business. Maybe they're a good mechanic, they're a great chef, maybe they've worked maybe years in corporate life, but they've had limited exposure to human resource issues, legal issues, accounting issues, just general supervisory and leadership issues. So we will basically sit them down and try to open their eyes to the fact that it's not just learning about how to get a business permit and open the door. Do you have enough money to survive the next 6 months if business doesn't take off? Who are you going to hire to handle all these different issues that I just mentioned? Are you going to try to do it all yourself? Are you going to bring in consultants? Do you have the finances to hire the right people? On and on and on. And yes, people do ask us, and quite often if they're a referral from the bank, they may get upset because we ask them to fill out certain documents. Maybe we pry into their financial background and ask them to bring in a credit report, their tax returns. And many times what we're doing is we're preparing them for the process to be able to meet with a banker, because we know the banker is going to ask those tough questions, and we want to ask those tough questions in confidence with them ahead of time to make that process easier, as well as coaching them in terms of, hey, these are where your strengths are, these are where your weaknesses are. Now let's concentrate on those strengths and see what we can do about improving these weaknesses before you take that next step of opening your business or applying for the loan or whatever it is that they've come in to get the advice on.
There's such a thing as riding the crest of a fad. And I can remember just 2 years ago where Zumba seemed to be like the business to get into. And now all of these tiny little shops that had Zumba are all gone. So when you fall into something like that, where you're riding the crest of a wave, and this is a question open-ended to everybody at the table. When you run into something like that, how do you advise a person to kind of just rein back a little bit and take a look at the big picture before you dump your money into something that may just be a flash in the pan?
Well, I'll take a stab at that. And basically what a lot of our business advisors look for, they look for niche businesses, niche ideas. Is the person coming in to start a Zumba studio when we already have, you know, 20 of them on the east side of El Paso and they want to put a number 21 over there? What makes them different? What makes them think they can succeed? Have they really studied the market? Have they studied the demographics to determine, are there enough people to fill that studio, to pay the rent, utilities, a livable salary for the owner maybe? All these things have to be considered. So we're going to ask them to do research. And research quite often is the most painful part of the whole process because the individual doesn't want to do it, first of all. They've got their mindset, I'm going to open this business. But they're many times unwilling to do the hard work to determine, is there really a market for their idea that is a sustainable idea, at least for a few years, and not something, like you said, that could be a fad that could be here and gone in less than a year. And unfortunately, you know, many people do take our advice. Many people don't take our advice because they're so headstrong and they feel there's no way I can fail in what I'm trying to do. This is what I've always wanted to do. And we just try to bring them down to earth and say, look, take your time. There's no reason to rush into this. Let's do the research first. Let's do some financial projections first to see, does it financially make sense for you to be able to do this? Are you going to be able to get enough customers to support this? And are you really passionate enough about it that you're willing to dedicate more than just 8 hours a day to make this a successful business? And if the market is highly saturated, how are you going to take those customers away from the competition and get them to come to your place of business? The business may still have viability and sustainability for years to come, but there's always competitors that are going to try to take your customers just as you're going to try to take their customers.
It makes sense to me. And I didn't mean to pick on Zumba, but it just seemed to me to be like the the major thing. I mean, you can take it all the way back to Furbies. Now they're selling emojis as little fur things that you can hang off your keychain. You know, we're taping this show on the advent of the Pope coming into El Paso, and there are several T-shirt places that have printed up $20, you know, I love the Pope. What are they going to do on Thursday with the load once they've printed up 15,000 of these things and they haven't sold?
I guess they're going to export them to Africa and, as bulk rags or something. So, unfortunately, that happens. That happens with almost any type of industry you can think of. Industries can be new and up and coming. They can be very mature and in their life cycle. It doesn't mean that an individual that's got an idea can't be successful in it. It's just that they have to take their time. They've got to do the research. They've got to analyze the market to determine if I get into this and spend my hard-earned money, can I really make a go of it? And I always tell people, don't fear competition. You can have a competitor open right next door to you. But if you're better than your competition, you have nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to getting educated, going to labor law seminars like this and other seminars that are out there, and continuing being on top of your game.
Let's get back to the workshop itself. There are a couple of issues that I'd like to kind of actually pinpoint. One of them is bullying in the workplace, which has been going on for centuries. And just lately, we're finally getting around to addressing the elephant in the room. And the other part to it is actually connected to that bullying in the workplace, and that's getting along with LGBTQI. How to make that work positively in your workplace and getting rid of the phobia and the stigma.
Right. So having good policies in place is the first place to start with both of those issues. And so we talk a lot about that during our seminar, good policies and then following certain procedures. Bullying in the workplace, there isn't a specific law that says bullying is against the law, but there are other laws that touch upon that. For example, any of the discrimination laws could possibly be used against an employer who allows bullying in the workplace. So employers have to be educated and know what the different laws are and how they can prevent these other issues from popping up. While bullying may not be illegal per se, it may be illegal if it becomes discriminatory in the workplace because of a protected class. With LGBT issues, again, we have yet to have a law that specifically says that speaks to LGBT issues. However, our current laws have been interpreted to apply to LGBT persons in the workplace. And so employers need to know what the laws are and they need to follow them. Part of setting up a good business and making sure that you're successful is knowing what the laws are and following them. And our main purpose with having the seminar, first of all, we love talking about what we do. Number two, we like providing a service to our community. And number three, for me personally, is to be proactive. I don't like to wait until a problem comes up. I rather help individuals, help small businesses, help employers, and being proactive, knowing what the laws are and knowing the right procedure for handling any type of issue that comes into the workplace.
In your workshop, I know that you'll touch upon investigating your business and making sure that you've got all of the little dots and T's and things already crossed and, you know, stuff like that. I know what I'm trying to say. It's just the cold medicine or whatever this thing is. It's starting to kick in. So basically, I guess what I'm trying to ask you is when you start getting into the nuts and bolts of things, everybody who is phobic about doing a little research, there are fun ways to get into the research without having to make it into a droll thing, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that makes our partnership with the Small Business Development Center and Scott Hulls so unique. We make our seminar interesting. We make it fun. For example, all of our topics this year are going to tie back in some way to a movie or something that you've seen in the past so that you can remember it and relate to it down the road. This is a fun seminar, but it's also very informative and you will learn a lot.
You know, I'd like to add one more thing also is that you know, if somebody thinks that the research or all the paperwork and the time that's involved in starting a business is cumbersome and boring, I have to question whether they have the passion to do it to begin with. And again, there's a lot of resources here in our community that are willing to assist people in their efforts to start a business or grow a business. But a lot of it has to start with the individual themselves. They've got to seek out those resources, take what advice they feel is going to be helpful to them, and try it. I mean, because when they get into business themselves, they're going to be tested every single day, either by their employees, their customers, by things they don't know that they need to get assistance on. So really the easy part is doing the research. The hard part is being in business.
I got it. Yeah,
and we make it even easier by having all of this information in one place in one day.
Okay. So there was something else that you piqued my interest in, and that's the advent of social media. Two different ways to interpret the meaning of social media in the workplace. Either your employees are dabbling on Facebook when they should be working, or you're not utilizing your own Facebook and Twitter and Instagram accounts as a small business owner properly in order to be able to best promote your business and product. So is it both?
Well, in our seminar, we're going to focus on the first of the two, which is having social media policies for use during the workplace. Mm-hmm. What can employers do and what can't they do? And the second part that we're going to focus on is not necessarily the one that you touched upon, but how employees use social media after work that may implicate your business, your workplace. There's a lot of cases that have come down when an employee, for example, goes on Facebook and bashes a supervisor that they don't like. What can an employer do within the law to discipline that employee or to address the issue?
Yeah, from a journalistic standpoint, it sounds as though Facebook or whatever you post on Facebook after hours or even during hours could be construed a little bit as either slanderous or libelous, depending on the circumstance.
Well, it depends. There's a lot of cases that have come out from the National Labor Relations Board that have said that an employee has the right to talk about the terms and conditions of their employment. And so we're going to have lots of examples to show all of the attendees at the seminar where the National Labor Relations Board has ruled in favor of employees that have been disciplined after they posted after hours regarding a supervisor or a work condition. And we're going to talk to employers about when they can and cannot take disciplinary action against those employees.
Okay. So that begs a question, at least for the state of Texas. When you work for an organization, a small company, large corporation, whomever, do you as an employee, are you the face of that organization after you leave from the 9-to-5 job?
It depends. If you're in a position of authority, and even if you're not, if you're wearing the T-shirt, if people know that you're working there, and if you're divulging certain information, it's definitely not a good thing as an employee.
Okay. So as an employer, if in the terms of the contract agreement of hiring a prospective employee, you say you cannot do X amount of things after hours. Is that legal to be able to imply that you can't imbibe in extracurricular activities like going to a nightclub and acting like a total jerk?
Well, you know, again, it depends. There are cases that fall on both sides of that. And I wish it was a simple answer, but it really depends on the situation.
So this workshop hopefully will be able to answer all of these questions and more.
Absolutely.
See, I'm liking this. I'm liking this more and more every day. Are you kidding? Because these are the questions that I would have. You know, I'm thinking in terms of I retire in about 5 or 6 years. And retirement for me means that I get to open up my own business finally. So whatever the widget is that I'm going to put out there, I know for a fact I'm going to wind up having to hire 2 or 3 people in order to help this thing work. I've already done a little research, so, Joe, we're good.
Okay. All right.
You know, I have this little bit of a passion for what I do. But bottom line is, you piqued my interest on several different levels because I know, for instance, here at the radio station, I have kids who are always playing on Facebook, even when they're at work. And I'm wondering if that in of itself is kind of like a violation of workplace and personal space.
Absolutely. And you should probably look at your employee handbook and find your policy to see what it is that your particular employer prohibits in the workplace.
Yeah, you know, here at UTEP, it will be the compliance training that we go through every year. And, you know, my kids are really good at it, but I've had a couple that are a little questionable. We've had our talks, and I've documented. So, you know, I'm following the policy of compliance. But still, for those who want to open up their own small business, you know, they should be talking to you, Joe, over at Small Business Development Center. You're easy to find over at the administration building at Viscount.
Yeah, we're off of Viscount, 9050 Viscount. We're kind of hard to find because we are kind of down the hill, located between Viscount and the New Fountains Mall. But it's the administrative service building. There are two buildings there, Building A, Building B. We're in Building B. This upcoming labor law seminar is going to be in Building A, and it's in a large auditorium. There's plenty of room. I think those that are lucky enough to have signed up and do attend are going to find that it's a wonderful seminar. It's something that I wish every business owner and HR professional could attend, just to enlighten them a little bit more on changing laws and what's current in the workplace.
And, of course, representing Scott Holtz, Rachel and Andrea, I mean, you guys are easy to find. You're in the Chase building.
Absolutely. We're downtown in the Chase building, the 11th floor. You can also find us at scottholtz.com or call our main number at 533-2493 and ask for Andrea or Rachel, and we'd be very happy to help you.
So when we decide that we're going to sign up for this workshop, we do the same number and the same website.
Yep. You can call our main line, or you can go on our website, scottholtz.com. You can also contact me directly, Rachel Hinman. I wanted to add, since you guys brought up this great point, that one of the phenomenal benefits of this seminar, aside from obviously there's seven great topics that we're going to be covering in depth, but there's also the opportunity, you know, as you're doing right now, to sit down with knowledgeable lawyers in labor and employment law and to actually ask them questions as they come up, which is just, it's invaluable. I mean, that opportunity to sit in a room of experienced attorneys and say, okay, now I'm wondering about this. Can you give me an answer on that one? And to sort of feed off of other people's input and other people's questions, it's fantastic.
It works for me, and I like the way that the workshop is structured so that you can have a fun one-on-one, and you don't feel like you're being interrogated, that
right.
type of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't like being interrogated. Andrea, you know, Rachel, Joe, thank you so much. Joe, you wanted to add?
I just wanted to add one more thing. This continues to be a very popular seminar year after year, and if somebody is very interested in attending the seminar, they need to contact Scott Hulse, and they need to go ahead and sign up. Seating is limited. Correct me if I'm wrong. There are over 180 people that have already registered for the event.
Right.
And there are not that many spaces left.
Okay.
Yeah. The it's a full day. I mean, we serve breakfast, we serve lunch, we have door prizes and games and skits, as well as the presentations themselves. So it is not only an educational day, but also an interactive day.
One more thing I'd like to add is that you can also obtain credit if you are certified in HR. This will serve to fulfill the requirements of continuing education.
Yes, we actually are offering HR credit, CPE credit, and CLE credit. So there are several credits that are available.
Mikasa Sikasa, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Anytime, come on down and let's talk. You know, I like this whole issue about talking about LGBT and social media. The bullying in the workplace really kind of piques my interest too, because there are so many different aspects of, you know, when you watch The Office, When you watch that and you think, oh, that can't be happening, yeah, it can be. I've worked at places like that. Yeah, I think it's time we actually sat down and kind of like noodled about. So thank you so much for coming in, and we'll do it again.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you.